Didn't get applause in the first service, so I like you better already. So my name is Michael. Once upon a time, I was one of you. I was a second service person. But now, for the last 6 months or so, I spend my second service time upstairs working with our teens. So I don't see a lot of you anymore, but it's nice to see you again. So as I just said, I work with the teens upstairs normally. And over the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about gratitude because it's Thanksgiving, and that's what you do at this time of the year. And we've been talking about what gratitude is, how it can be misused in our culture, how it can be used properly, how it can motivate us to repair and improve the world around us. And it's difficult sometimes to think of gratitude as being misusable because it's such a noble emotion. But as we've talked about it, and I've shared some of my thoughts, and they've shared some of their thoughts with me, I think we've really hit on some things that I hope are useful to you as well. But before we talk about the ways that we can properly use it, let's talk about a few ways that we do misuse. So I don't know if many of you do this, but it was a tradition that I'm familiar with where around the Thanksgiving table, before you eat the turkey, everyone has to say one thing that they're grateful for. And if you're the first person or the second person, you're lucky, because you get to say food and a table and family members and a house. You get to say the easy things. Everyone else is all of a sudden stricken with a mad dash to play the game of I Spy, where it's, well, I'm thankful for mom, and I'm thankful for grandpa, and all of those things. And it becomes so much about, I will say anything you want, give me the turkey, right? We pass over the entire meaning of what we're trying to do, which is saying that there is a lot of things that we have to be grateful for in this room. Let's say thanks. It doesn't become that. It becomes transactional. It becomes, I'll give you gratitude if you give me turkey. And that's not the only way that we do what I would call shallow gratitude in our society. I would argue that shallow gratitude is actually the most dominant form of gratitude in our society. So it's not just turkey that I can get. Sometimes it's like this, which you may not be able to see, but this is an ad I saw walking around Cary Town Center, which says, being grateful makes you gorgeous. It can be trading gratitude for beauty. Or maybe it's an article like this, which is 7 scientific ways that gratitude improves your life. And it's not that this is wrong, right? Doug talked about a version of this when he was explaining the benefits of gratitude in our meditation this morning. It's not that gratitude isn't beneficial, but it can so often become a way that gratitude is my ticket to get those good things, and I'll do the action to get the benefit. I don't know if any of you have ever done gratitude journals. I have. I've bought gratitude journals. I've filled them out. 3 things I'm grateful for first thing in the morning. And it can be a little bit like a vending machine where I put in a dollar, I don't get a Coke. I'm not less stressed out the next day. I'm not happier. My relationships aren't better. So I try one more dollar in the vending machine the second day. Still no Coke. So by the third day, I'm not seeing what I'm doing here. I'm not getting the reward that I expected to get, and gratitude goes out the window. So it's not that you're bad. It's not that we're bad. It's kind of the soup we swim in. Doug talked about how church is not transactional either, but we live in a culture that bombards us with transactional messaging. So I'll talk about one thing that isn't gratitude related, but I think it makes the point. My wife, Hannah, is a crafty person, I would say. She's good at journaling and scrapbooking and knitting and crocheting and doing all of the things that I wish I could do but don't have the skills to do. And she, a few years back, started making little cute felt ornaments. They were little birds and they were little pop culture references like Minecraft or Super Mario Brothers or whatever. And people were loving them and they said they'd like to buy them from her. So enter Etsy. And Etsy, if you're familiar with it, is an online virtual craft fair, for lack of a better word. You can make handmade goods, you can sell them to people online. And she started putting her stuff online, and people started to buy it. Not a lot, but a little bit. And it was enough to encourage her to make more, because then she could pay for her Michael's shopping run, for her craft shopping run, which, if you're crafty, is like heaven, right? So very quickly and very subtly, she began to think about her crafting differently. She began to think about this drive to be creative, this thing that she loved to do, in monetary terms. In how many minutes does it take me to make this really simple ornament that sells well versus how many minutes does it take for me to make this more complex ornament that I feel like I'm doing something good when I make? And then guilt entered the picture on, well, I'm not using my time effectively. I could be making more money if I made more of the simple things. And she burnt out, right? Very quickly. It was only a matter of months. So this internal voice, this internal drive to be creative, got swarmed by guilt. And I didn't tell her to do only the profitable things. No one told her that directly. But our culture kind of did, right? If you've ever heard the message of hustling and rising and grinding and doing what you love and turn your hobby into a business and follow your passion, these are things where we hear that this internal drive that we have really should be monetized. It should be turned into productivity, and it can become difficult to enjoy the whole reason that we did it in the first place. So gratitude is also not results-driven. Creativity is not results-driven. These are internal. They come from something deeper. And if you think about it, we know this in some aspects of our life. If you were to picture a child drowning in a river next to you or in a pool next to you, and you were the only one that saw it happening, you know, I could tell you studies. I could tell you about all of the ways in which altruistic people, those that self-sacrifice with no expectation of reward, live better lives, happier lives. People like them more. They probably make more money over the course of their lives. But we don't do a cost-benefit analysis before saving the child. We just jump in and do it because it's something inside that demands to be acted upon. So do we benefit from gratitude? Yes. Do we benefit from meditation? Yes. Do we benefit from being creative? Absolutely. But when we turn gratitude into a transaction, or when we turn meditation into, I'll give you 20 minutes of silence if you give me enlightenment, or I'll give you my creativity if you pay me for my craft, we've missed something deep. We've missed the point. So what's a different way that we can look at gratitude? Well, Doug talked about a few that we can do this morning in the meditation, and I'd say let's zoom in on the action that gratitude can motivate us to do. So baked into my definition of gratitude, at least, is something about it being unearned. If you bust it to get an A on a test, or if you go really hard at your job and you get a job promotion or a raise, you might say you're appreciative, you might say you're relieved, you might even say you're thankful. But I wouldn't say that grateful is the best definition for it, because in that situation, you've put in X units of effort and gotten Y units of reward. You have received justice. And I would say gratitude, to me, speaks of something that is not based on justice. It's instead something that we didn't earn. Doesn't mean that it's unfair, it doesn't mean that it's bad, but my family structure is not something I chose, it's not something I earned. The country that I'm born into, the economic resources I have at my disposal, are not things that I was born into. And so often we stop at saying, I'm grateful for my family. Or we may even take it a second step, and we'll say, I'm grateful for my family because they're always there for me. But I would argue, let's take it a third step. And let's say, what about the thing that you're grateful for, what does it give you that you otherwise wouldn't have? What benefit have you received? What feeling does it allow you to feel, or what opportunity does it provide that you otherwise wouldn't have? So my mother, for example, if you are familiar with the Enneagram form of personality, she is an 8. If you're not, it means she can argue very well. And for me, growing up with her, she always pushed me. She always would debate with me. She would always encourage me to argue back. But the thing that she gave me was respect and autonomy and the feeling that my opinion mattered. She would always engage with me as a human to human. And for me, that meant that going into the rest of my life, I always had the floor of confidence that said that I do matter. My opinion does matter. I have the capability of putting things into the world, and people should respect it because I'm a human being, right? Not everyone gets that, and I'm grateful for that. Because I didn't pick my mom. If I could, she'd be a great pick. But I didn't do it. I was just born into it. So Richard Rohr gets quoted a lot here, a Franciscan friar. And he has a center, a nonprofit, that's called the Center for Action and Contemplation. Doug quotes that a lot because it's a great phrasing, action and contemplation. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has a phrase that I'm going to kind of roughly adapt here. And it's that action without contemplation is reckless. But contemplation without action is ineffective and sentimental. So gratitude is ultimately a contemplative emotion in nature. It is an internal feeling that we may vocalize. We've talked about how it's not transactional. It can be misused, it can be co-opted as a transaction, but that's not its purpose. But it can and it should drive action. So the question is, what action? We have culture that attempts to co-opt it to drive purchases so that we feel gorgeous, but it can drive something deeper. So here's a thought experiment to provide one answer. It's not the only answer, but it's one answer. It's not my original thought experiment. This comes from someone who is very successful in our culture and has a lot to be grateful for. But he was asked what forms his social philosophy. And he said, if you imagine that 24 hours before you were born, a genie were to come to you in the womb, and imagine you had all of your faculties at this point and could talk to him. And he said, I think you look like a really intelligent potential human, so I'm going to give you a lot of power and a lot of responsibility. And he says, you think for a little bit, but you get to decide what world that you, your children, and grandchildren are about to inhabit. And I will make it happen. I promise you it will be exactly as you describe. You get to pick the political structure that your world will have. Is it a democracy? Is it a republic? Is it a monarchy? Is it totalitarian? You get to pick your economic system. Is it capitalist? Is it socialist? Is it democratic socialist? Is it some form of feudalism? You get to pick the social structures that you'll walk into. What's the dominant religion? What happens to those that aren't members of the dominant religion? What about gender? Are males privileged above women? How so? What about race? What's the dominant race? How are those that are not the dominant race treated? What about those, or how do we treat those with a particular kind of intelligence? What happens if you don't have the genetic code that provides that intelligence? What about physical capability? The list could go on and on. You get to make those decisions. But the catch is that before you're born, you reach your hand into a fishbowl. Fishbowl's bigger on the inside than the outside, and as you rummage around, there are 7 billion slips of paper, one for every human being on our planet. So the world that you've designed is great, but what happens if you pull out a slip of paper that represents someone that is not a member of the dominant gender? If your society privileges men above women, you got a 50-50 shot at being female. If your country is one in which you are a capitalist society, what happens if you're not able to partake in that form of capital? If your society rewards those who have a particular form of intelligence, what if you're born with a different form? You don't have that control, so not knowing which slip you'll pull out, do you want to rethink your world? Do you want to redesign it? So we didn't have that opportunity, right? We were born into a world where these decisions had been made over thousands of years. But for all of us in the room, if you ask yourself the question, would I be willing to reach my hand back into the fishbowl and pull out a different slip, what would your answer be, right? No, wouldn't be for me. I was born a white male with a good, healthy genetic code into a family that was there to support me. I was born into the dominant religion where everyone in the culture knows my stories and represents my life. Pretty much everyone in this room, by the nature of the fact that we are in this room, has won that lottery. We won that jackpot, right? And that doesn't make us bad, but it does mean that we should probably have some humility about it. There are those of us in this country, in this county, in this city that have not had the same opportunities. So when you think about what you're grateful for, that next step that I talked about, that step about what is the benefit that's been accorded to you as a result of whatever, who are the people that don't have that? Why don't they have it? Do you know any of them? What can be done about it to make it more likely that they experience the same benefit that you have? I'll close with one more story about me. One of the things that I'm grateful for that I actually just mentioned was my relative health. I'm 28, and up to this point, I've had no significant health problems. The only surgery I've had was elective when I got lasers shot at my eyes so I could see better, right? I've never had a significant chronic disease. My wife and I, and our new 15-month-old, has a high-deductible healthcare plan because it's the one that we can afford, right? It has a out-of-pocket maximum of around $12,000 a year. We have worked really hard to get an emergency fund such that if the worst were to happen and I were to be in a catastrophic car crash or be diagnosed with cancer, that I don't need to worry about that out-of-pocket maximum. We can make it. But 66% of people in our society today that go bankrupt because of medical bills. And if I get diagnosed with cancer tomorrow, 1 year's worth of an out-of-pocket maximum is nothing, right? I am grateful for my health because that stability of health has allowed us to have the stability to pay off our student loans, to buy a house, to have the comfort and the stability to bring a child into the world. But there are so many others who did the same things that we did, that worked just as hard as we did, that saved just as much as we did, and in a blink of an eye, that stability is gone. My uncle, at 22, was diagnosed with epilepsy in the military, and his life changed in the blink of an eye. So, we have benefited. We've lived well. We've done well. We've worked hard. But how much of our success is really based on things we didn't control, things that we can be grateful for because we didn't earn? And what should that drive us to do? For me, this is not trying to make a political point. I am driven by that gratitude to advocate for a healthcare system that doesn't rely on that razor-thin edge. For you, it might be something totally different. You might be grateful for the same thing, but have a different action that's motivated by it. You may be grateful for completely different things. But my point is that we should be driven to take action. Doug mentioned in the What Are You Thinking of the first lesson that we have on our wall. The reason in our Christian tradition that Abraham was blessed was not so he could be blessed, but so that he could bless other nations. Those of us that have a lot should be driven to find ways to bring those same benefits to others. So for me, the work that I do with the teens is a way of paying forward that which my mother gave me, the respect, the autonomy, the comfort, and the confidence. I want to bring that to others. Maybe you're grateful for the authentic community that we have here that Doug talked about. And it's not, as he talked about last week, a transactional thing, but it is a place where you can take action to bring that same community to others, or with Wake County sponsors. We're trying to build a world in which 13,000 people are born in Wake County every year, 13,000 slips of paper being pulled from the fishbowl. What are they entering? What world are they entering? Would you be willing to be one of those 13,000? If not, we can work together to make it a world in which we are willing to. So, my hope for all of us this Thanksgiving season is that we are grateful. We take the time to appreciate that which we've been given, both earned and unearned, and that we're driven to repair the world around us. Amen.